Hi everyone, I'm Jenna Millie with Screenwriting U, and I'm here today with Drew Goddard, who wrote The Martian, starring Matt Damon. Hi, Drew.
Jenna, how are you?
Good. So great to talk to you. I love The Martian. You must be getting so much good feedback on how awesome a movie it is. It's just so great. There's so much positive vibes to it, and so much science and learning, and It's just such a good movie. How did you come aboard this project?
I first heard about it when our producer Aditya Sood called me, and he said, "I found this ebook that you should take a look at." And I'm such a Luddite. I said, "What's an ebook? I'm not even sure what you're talking about." And this guy's been publishing a book, a chapter a month for the last 3 years. On his website and giving it away for free, and you should check it out because it's good. And I said, that sounds terrible. you want me to adapt a blog? And he said, just look at it, Drew. And I read it and fell in love, and it was very much like, oh, okay. I mean, Andy Weir, who wrote the book, is so talented, and the book is so good that it made my job easy. I just read it and said yes.
Wow. What a great feeling when that happens. What's it like to plot out the story, you know, knowing that a book is longer and it could take, 8 hours to read and a movie takes 2 hours to watch. So you have a lot that you have to cut out. How do you decide? Is it just you go with your gut, or do you find what's most memorable to you and make sure you put that in? Or, you know, how would you edit this book into the adaptation?
Yeah, you sort of go into this knowing that you're going to have to be cruel at first, you know, and that you've got to make some cuts, and you're going to have to cut some stuff that you love. And that was certainly the case. But I start with, it's exactly as you say, I start with my gut. I start with the parts that I love the most. I try to find a theme or, you know, the soul of the book and make sure every scene ties into the soul of the book ties into the soul of the movie. Just when in doubt, if it doesn't, you can cut it, and that tends to be my guidelines. When I'm making the hard decisions,
was there one thing you had to cut from the book that just kind of broke your heart or was really hard to do? Just for beginner writers out there, to give them an example of what is a kind of a tough choice.
Yeah, definitely. There's the section sort of in the last third of the movie when Matt Damon's character travels from his hab to the launch site. In the book, that's like 100 pages long. I mean, it's a complicated journey. And I just realized that it's beautiful. It's where the book gets at its most poetic. And it's just a beautiful sequence. And I thought that, you know, I wanted to capture as much as I could, but the problem is at that point in the movie, you're at the 2 hour mark, and in the movie, you know, at a certain point, the movie's just going to be too long. And we felt like we could do as much with a 4 minute montage and Harry's beautiful score and Ridley's sweeping vistas. You know, it's amazing how much you can condense. But I look at that 100-page section and know that there's beautiful writing that I didn't get to put on screen, and so that part's still set, even though I think we made the right decision.
Wow, what a great example, just seeing how you could go from 100 pages to 4 minutes. It's a really good example of, you know, just how things translate differently on screen. What's it like to get the science right? Or do you stick with the story first and then you put the science pieces on top of that? There's so much great detail in here. And just watching it myself, I was thinking, wow, I wonder how he would pick what pieces of science to include or not. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what's in the book, and Andy is so good at that, at the science and the detail, that it made that side of it easy. I think when I approached it, I sort of stepped back and said, my job is to make the best movie possible, and so I just focused on story first and trusted that if I got the spine of the story right, we would have time to fix the science, and that's exactly what we did. You know, I just sort of, I focused on mostly Matt Damon's character and what he was going through and the emotion of what he was going through, because you know that if you do that, the audience can track it even if they don't understand the science, because that was always the fear of this movie, is, are we making it too dense and too complicated for an audience to understand? And I kept saying, as long as we understand what he's going through, we'll trust that. You take pleasure in hearing about how water is synthesized, for instance, even if you don't actually understand what's happening, you get that he's thirsty, if that makes sense.
And so we
went through it like that. And then once I finished the first draft, I gave it to Andy, who's brilliant. And then we gave it to NASA and JPL and had their teams vet it all. And they sort of told us what we got wrong. We fixed what we could, and it was a delightful collaboration in that regard.
Wow, and that's what's so great about it. If you don't understand it, you can look it up later and ask, you know, learn more, which I think is what's so cool about the science hero. I just was curious. I read a quote from you saying that you thought the story was a spiritual journey, which is just so funny because it's so kind of right-brained, but it's got so much heart.
Yeah.
Did you want to just tell me more about that?
Yeah, that was sort of my approach, at least structurally, to say, okay, just think of it like a religious movie. Think of, you know, the way something like the Ten Commandments would get structured, because it's very much, you know, a human is lost in the wilderness and has to rely on his own faith to save him, which is sort of a classic mythological story. And the only thing we changed is that the religion that he has faith in is science. But we sort of held with that idea throughout, just to give us a... I always like if I can find something familiar to cling to before I screw it all up with silliness and things that are new. You know, you're always trying to find the balance of the familiar and the new.
Well, I don't know what... Let you tell me if you wrote this right after you wrote World War Z and The Cabin in the Woods, because I know sometimes you can write a script and it gets produced out of order when you wrote it. But was this, were you sort of building on those themes yourself, or what you had just been through with those other projects? How, like, what's it like to come off sort of a apocalyptic zombie movie and then go to Mars? Is that like give you a headache or what happens?
No, I mean, I never try to repeat myself. I try to do the same, you know, I have the same approach to everything, which is I try to just respond to what I'm feeling. And if I feel that I'm inspired by something, that's usually a good sign. And, you know, I just try to switch it up, I guess. But at the same time, I see a lot of themes that I respond to over and over and over. And, all those movies that you're describing, it still has characters trying to look after one another in the face of overwhelming craziness. You know, in some cases it's zombies, in some cases it's Mars, but it tends to be the theme that I keep coming back to over and over.
Do you think, because I noticed this movie, it has so much heart, but there isn't any melodrama to it. Like, you could have been in a storyline of him communicating with people back home, but that's not in there, which I thought was really cool. I didn't want to see him communicating with his parents or maybe people he knew, but I wondered if that was a choice that, or, you know, a question that had come up during development that you might want to see him.
It definitely was a question. And you know, the book doesn't do that. And I think that's part of what I responded to. And when people would ask, oh, could you give him a love interest? I resisted it because I felt like, once you do that, the whole movie becomes about that. You know, once you make it a love interest, then the whole movie is just, I need to get back home to my true love. And
right.
That's it. And then it becomes about that. And we felt like this was about something bigger. You know, if you take that piece out of it, then suddenly it becomes about the connection we all have with one another rather than one single relationship. And that's just what's felt right for this particular movie.
I love that choice, and it seems like a difficult choice to make because you don't really hear about, you know, a son who just wants to make his parents proud, and that's just a tiny part of it, but you know that's what's made him so good, you know, as a student of botany, and he became an astronaut, and that is just, you get that whole American dream feeling about it, but you don't see the parents. I loved that choice, and I was just curious if you had thought about it. So how do you take a note like, hey, we need a love interest? Does that come from a producer or someone in development? And how do you handle coming back to them and saying, eh, I don't think this is right? Because that seems like a delicate thing to do.
Well, the tricky part is sometimes you give yourself those notes too. You know, it's not like you sort of want to kick the tires on a screenplay when you're working on it and see what feels right to you. So I'm sure I was the first person to think, like, oh, before anyone even gave me the note, I probably said, I wonder if I should give him a love interest. And then I paced around enough to have a proper opinion on it. So that when it comes up, I think people just want to be heard, and you want to be open. You as a screenwriter want to be open to the idea that you could be wrong. So usually I'll take a note and then I'll say, let me think about it. And I'll go think about it for a while and come back. And, you know, if it's a collaborator who I respect, I try to respond with equal respect. And just explain why I think it's better to go a different way if I disagree. Usually, it's all about tone. And if you treat people the way you want to be treated, it tends to go fine.
And do you just decide based on experience, or, you know, you have your own confidence about the story? Because sometimes, and I'm asking for beginners out there, it gets confusing when you get a lot of notes and you kind of don't know what the answer is sometimes.
Which is why I always say to start from a place of love. Because if you love it, you can see the forest through the trees. But if you don't, it all becomes a jumble when you start getting notes and all. You know, like, because you don't know yourself. But if you love something, you can always fall back on, do I love this story? Do I love this scene? Do I love these characters? What do I love about them? Okay, that's what I have to protect. That's what I have to protect more than anything. And if you don't have that, then it's a mess. And I've made that mistake before in my career and been a part of messes. And it's always because I said yes or approached something because I thought it would be a good idea, or, you know, it was a movie that would get made or that would get popular, which is, you know, that was what was popular with audiences at that time. Any of those things, and all of those are the wrong reasons to approach a script. The only reason to approach a script is do you love this story? Do you love it? And if you do that, it makes this much easier. And if you don't, you're screwed.
Wow, that's great advice, because it's hard sometimes when you're trying to navigate through all these notes. And you want to advance the project. And a lot of beginners, they don't, you know, they have to develop with people who are, they're writing for free, basically. They're making changes and not getting paid. So how to know when to do that and stick to the love is a good response.
And Chris, well, part of that is, is to trust your gut. What you're looking for is people that believe in the same type of movie that you believe in. So if you're getting the sense that this person understands the same movie that you understand, then listen to them, because they probably have good points. But sometimes, you know, they want a different movie entirely, and you also have to listen to that and know, okay, we're just not on the same page. I don't need to put a lot of stock in this opinion. You know, like, that's, sometimes you just have to tap out and find someone else. If you really believe in your movie, you have to be protective of it as well.
Yeah. Great note. It's tough out there when you're getting started. You're such a rock star in the feature side of writing, but I see your credits include Buffy, Angel, one of my favorite shows, and Lost. What was it like to go from TV to now more feature writing, or have you always done both?
I mean, the dirty secret is screenwriting is so much easier than television writing. It's so much easier.
Really? Tell me, why is it easier? Yeah. Why is that? Because you get to finish?
And it's what? TV is so much harder because every 8 days you're making an hour. Every 8 days you've got to write 60 pages, and that's a nightmare. You know, it's just, the clock is your enemy in TV writing, because, and it's also great. You also will, it will lead you to make things that you never would do because you don't have time, you know, to second guess yourself. And second guessing yourself can be really a screenwriter's worst enemy. But it's not good for your mental health, because every 8 days, you know, you turn in a script and then the clock starts ticking again and you got to come up with 60 more pages. It's the best possible training ground.
What was your favorite show you've written, if you can think of it off the top of your head?
Well, I've loved every show I've been on, for sure. I've been really lucky. But I know the sweet spot, I think, from a purely creative point of view, was Angel, because we reached this point on Angel where nobody cared. And by that I mean we got the same rating every week, no matter what we did. So the networks just stopped giving us notes, and we were just free, and our audience was going to stick with us no matter what. And so we were just free to do what we were inspired by. And so there was a peer, and that writing staff was just off the charts great. It was a joy to go into work with all of those writers. And so there's a stretch at the end of Angel where every episode is so wildly different.
Yeah.
And insane. I mean, we're turning, you know, I think we had a 4-episode stretch where it's like we killed the main character, we turned our lead into a puppet, we killed another main character, we did a submarine episode. it just
that's awesome.
And it was so fun, because it just felt like every day you didn't know, it's not that you didn't know what show you were going to write, you didn't even know what genre you were going to write every day when you would come to work. It would be like Friday, Joss would say, I think we should do a submarine episode, and by Monday you're standing on a submarine. And that was really fun, and I'm still trying to replicate that feeling of danger, because it really led to some great creativity.
I love that show. It was one of my favorites, and I always watched it, and I was a huge fan. So I agree with you. Well, thank you so much, Drew.
Thank you.
Congratulations, and I hope I talk to you for your next script. You're an amazing writer, and already learned so much just in 15 minutes. So thank you.
Oh, that is so kind. Thank you so much. This was a joy, and I hope we get to speak again.
Yeah. All right. Take care.
Okay.
See you.
So bye.
Bye.